seated, please. Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We had a change of panel, and we're ready for the 10:30 case, which was postponed because of the ice, as I recall, the first time. Appreciate your patience, and today's a better day. So I'll ask Ms. Fisak to call the case, and we'll go forward if you're ready.
May it please the court, Mr. Kevin Miller will argue for appellant. Mr. Tom Bishop will argue for appellee.
Please.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Kevin Miller. I signed a Mr. Jenkins personal injury case approximately 10 years ago. Mr. Jenkins got hurt in an oil field related accident in Atascosa County just south of San Antonio. The crux of this issue, the crux of this case, hinges upon the recent Supreme Court opinion in 08 in the Crocker, National Union versus Crocker, and its application to the facts of this case, as well as a Weaver opinion from 1978. Therefore, I think the facts of this case are very important.
And Harwell, which was my case.
Yes, ma'am, I know that, Harwell. That was not exactly the reason that the summary judgment was granted. The reason summary judgment was granted was because of the recent opinion in Crocker. But you're right, Harwell does have application. In this case, Mr. Jenkins was working independently as an independent contractor for LNG Pipe. Deborah Grissomer, one of the defendants, who was married to the other defendant, Gus Lemon, had purchased a policy of insurance from the defendant, State and County, the appellee in this case. In the application and in the policy, listed as a driver was Mark Lemon of M&T Trucking. In the policy, the Texas auto policy, it states a named insurer is anybody who is operating your covered vehicle.
A named insured or an insured?
An insured. An insured is anybody listed on the policy or operating your vehicle with permission or under hire.
So wouldn't that be an additional insured?
I don't believe so, and here's why. Because Mark Lemon was listed on the application as being a driver of the International Winch truck that was listed as a covered vehicle under the policy, which is a distinction to an omnibus provision under the Crocker case. In the footnote 2 in Crocker, they make a distinction as to the additional insured, and they called it an additional insured, but they made a distinction saying that the actual additional insureds in Crocker were covered under the omnibus provision, which is something even more attenuated from the named insured. It's people that, because of their connection to the occurrence, may be covered under the omnibus clause of the policy and not a specific coverage provision of the policy. In this case, Mark Lemon was and had application not just the occurrence, but he was named as a driver of this International Winch truck, and because he was a person who was hired, the policy was purchased for the purposes of moving this tank and moving the oil field equipment, which hurt Gary Jenkins. In that case, he is more than just an omnibus additional insured under Crocker. He is an insured under that policy because of his connection to the policy, not his connection to the occurrence or one of the possible insurers in the case. A significant distinction if you're looking at footnote 2 of Crocker, where they make a distinction on the omnibus coverage. Back to the facts. Gary files a notice. Gary Jenkins files a notice. We get an attorney in the case. Attorney says, we have serious concerns about coverage. We don't think there's any coverage, and we don't think these are insureds under the policy. Lawsuit's filed. Deborah Grissomer writes a letter saying, hey, I want coverage as to LNG Pipe and my husband, Gus Lemon, and Mark Lemon is Gus Lemon's brother. The carrier, under reservation of rights, accepts defense as to LNG Pipe and Gus Lemon and Deborah Grissomer, but not as to Mark Lemon.
What do you mean, not as to Mark Lemon? Did they ever deny coverage as to Mark Lemon?
The letters to us, they denied coverage, saying he wasn't a named insured, number one. Number two, Gary's not covered under this policy because he's an employee of LNG Pipe, neither of which are the case. And I get to that. Well, let me answer that. The reason that Gary's not an employee is because the jury so found. The jury found, as undisputed, the trial of the case that Gary was an independent contractor. By Gary's own statement and his testimony and deposition 2 years before the trial, he says, "I was an independent contractor, and I wasn't on the payroll of LNG Pipe." He says Mark Lemon was an independent contractor. Deborah Grissomer and Gus Lemon's deposition, which was part of the evidence at the trial as well as deposition, Gus says, "We purchased this policy and we designated this tractor because we wanted Mark to do the work and doing the winch work for the oil field equipment." So they denied coverage as to the named insured and as to the relative location or applicability of Gary to the employment, neither of which apply. Clearly, the jury finding that Gary was, which was submitted by the defendant in this case, that Gary was an independent contractor precludes that coverage defense. The last remaining defense was whether or not Mr. Lemon has any connection to the policy. Crocker says, and Weaver and Harwell say, if, in fact, you have an additional insured, somebody attenuated from the insurance policy that the carrier may or may not know about, and that person doesn't make a demand for a defense or demand for coverage, then there is no duty. Crocker is a little different. The distinction while the case was certified is because the carrier knew. They knew about the coverage. They knew what this guy's connection to the case, and they knew he didn't know. But if you read the very first page of the opinion, it says, based upon the facts of this case. My interpretation of that, Supreme Court's limited it, and it is very clear that the court in Crocker is trying to prevent collusion. In that case, the additional insured, Morris, I think was his name, the additional insured in that case had told the attorney hired by the insurance company, "I've already hired counsel, I'll wait for a phone call back." Counsel's testimony in the opinion says, I ceased contact with him. I never had any more contact with the additional insured because he told me he had a lawyer and was waiting for a phone call. At a deposition, he refused to talk to or have any connection with the counsel for the insurance company retained to defend the case. None of those cases apply here. The distinction in this case is citation by publication. We sent a letter, 2 years before the default was even taken, saying, we've served Mark by publication. Here's a copy of it. What are you going to do? The response twice was, "Well, we're going to file a deck action." Never filed a deck action.
So would you impose a voluntary duty on State and County here to have gratuitously furnished Mr. Lemon a defense?
One, I don't think it's gratuitous. I think he's an insured under policy. I don't think that's gratuitous. They knew that he was, in fact, sued. They knew what his connection to the case was. In this particular case, that default sat interlocutory for 2 years and didn't become final until the judgment became final after the trial of the case.
Right. Let me alter my question a little bit then. A duty to come forward and defend him without his request.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. The distinction is publication. In all the cases that you can find, there is some likely collusion, or you have, which was discussed in the Crocker case, you have an insurer that knows about coverage but may not want it for whatever reason. Maybe they've hired their own counsel. There are several elements discussed in Crocker which aren't here. In each and every case that I've been able to find, you have an insurer that may not know about the coverage, but they knew about the accident, they knew about a lawsuit. In this case, there's no evidence that Mark Lemon knew anything. In fact, in Gus's deposition and his trial testimony, he said, "I haven't seen Mark, I haven't heard from Mark, I don't know where Mark is. Obviously, he didn't want me getting to Mark." But that's the evidence that's before this court, is nobody knows where Mark is. He was served by publication, and there's no evidence in this record that anybody except the insurance company on which he was listed as a driver on the policy, an additional driver on the policy, knew and did nothing. This is different than Crocker, where a guy's participating and actively working with the plaintiff's lawyer. And that's why I think the court in the first page says, based upon the facts of this case, we're going to limit our decision to this. And I think that's what they've done. I think it's abundantly unfair to say that the guy listed as a driver on a truck listed on a policy goes for 4 years in litigation. The lawyer who's hired to defend the joint defendants in the case, who bought the policy that named the defendant, the defaulting defendant, that carrier has no duty whatsoever to that insured.
But ethically, how could the carrier hire a lawyer to come in and defend someone that they don't even know where he is, whether he wants them to or not?
I understand that. I don't know that. I don't know that that's the facts of this case. In a certain hypothetical under your question, I agree. And you know how that could be cured? Declaratory judgment action. In 1997, the court says, we're going to allow you not just to litigate duty to defense, but we're going to allow you to litigate coverage at the same time before judgment. Before 97, you could only litigate in a DAC action duty to defend, which many carriers elected not to do that. They were defending their reservation rights, and it made it very difficult because you didn't get to the coverage issue until judgment, which made cases settle. In 97, the Supreme Court, I don't remember the name of the case, obviously for obvious purposes, because there's ethical issues and there's conflict of interest issues. In 97, I don't remember the name of the case, the Supreme Court says, we are now going to allow coverage, indemnity, as well as duty to defend. Had you done that as a carrier, you lawyered up, you sue, you name everybody, we litigate it, you litigate all the coverage defenses, duty to cooperate, which would be one of the ethical issues that you're raising here, could have all been litigated before any default judgment, before any final judgment. That takes care of any ethical issues. But to do nothing when you have an insured, and to let a judgment be taken, and then to submit a coverage defense and have that ruled against you, to let a default in excess of the policy limit sit for 2-something years and do nothing, that is more of an ethical concern to me than the concerns that you raised, when those could be cured simply by doing what they threatened me to do, and that is to file a declaratory judgment, not once but twice, and to fail to do that. And there was plenty of time to do that. I gave them more than ample time to do that before this case was pushed to trial. The estoppel argument, that is that if Mark Lemon isn't insured, not an omnibus covered insured as in Crocker, but is a named insured, you have notice of the lawsuit. You have an insured under the policy sending you a letter in the form of Deborah Grissomer saying, hey, I want coverage. Here's an occurrence. I've been sued. Here's a copy of the lawsuit, which we also forwarded to them, and that's undisputed. They know about the occurrence. They know about who's covered, and they even know that there may be some policy defenses. And then to fail to raise those at the same time you're working against the guy that you want to submit to the jury to get 100% finding of comparative fault on, and then to say, oh, we've got coverage defenses in a subsequent case to enforce a default judgment, that is a pure estoppel argument. So I guess the crux of the issue is he an additional insured or is he insured? If he's insured, estoppel applies. The judgment should be enforced. If he is, in fact, an additional insured, then I have to deal with Crocker. In this case, I do not think he is an additional insured under Crocker. He clearly is not omnibus. He fits the definition of insured under clear language of the policy, and he's listed as a driver of the truck that they know about, and they knew about for 4-something years.
Do you know of any case law that holds that being listed as a driver makes you something other than an additional insured, something more in the nature of a named insured?
I do not. But if you read the policy, it says who's insured. It's not an additional insured. Who is also insured? It tells you that anybody driving your covered auto is insured. And then when he's not clearly excluded, he clearly is contemplated as a person who's going to operate this vehicle for the purposes of moving oil field equipment, because that's what's in the application. So it was clearly contemplated that Mark Lemon would be operating this vehicle. Well, you take the language of the insuring provision, that is, who is insured, and you take the fact that he's listed as a driver of that vehicle, an operator of that vehicle. That's more than just somebody who, because of their connection to the occurrence, may also be entitled to some kind of coverage from the insurance policy. He is specifically designated as an insured because of his application to the occurrence. I'm going to give you back some time. There's some more questions.
I'd like to ask
yes,
a question. Are we to assume that Mark Lemons is a person who is alive today?
Honestly, Judge, I don't know. I have looked for Mark Lemon.
I'm assuming you did. I'm just saying that for us to deal with this case upon a basis of your default judgment, then we have to assume that he's alive, don't we?
Yes, and I think that assumption is very good because particularly at the time of trial. I know he was alive at the time of trial given Gus Lemon's testimony. Whether he's alive today, I don't know. Do you assume that? Yes, because it's a summary judgment. I think you have to assume the facts as they were at the time of the trial and at the time of any duty which should have been kicked in at the time. whether he's alive today for purposes of enforcing that judgment. I don't know that that's particularly relevant since I'm enforcing the judgment not against him but against the carrier. I stepped into his shoes. Do I assume that? Yes, I think you probably need to. But is it particularly relevant for purposes of this case? I don't think so.
I would like for you to clarify, just take one moment to clarify your argument you just made on why the company is stopped from asserting lack of notice.
Sure. If you're an insured, you're an insured of the insurance company, and the insured gets notice of the occurrence, notice of the lawsuit against the insured, and does nothing, and has coverage defenses against that insured, doesn't file a deck action, and reserves, files a reservation rights letter and gets it wrong, or files a reservation rights letter and doesn't send it, or doesn't state with specificity, then the doctrine of estoppel would apply with regard to coverage defenses. In this case, there were all kinds of coverage defenses that they made to me. Whether they made them to Mark Lemon or not, I don't know. That's not in the record. But they made them to me, and they were turned out to be unfounded. They were wrong. So you have to assume that if they made them to me, they probably mailed letters of reservation rights saying he's not a named insured, he's not insured under the policy. Oh, and there's no coverage here because Gary Jenkins was an employee of LNG Pipe. Both wrong in this case. In this particular case, estoppel would apply. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Is that your Parker Products case argument?
I believe that's okay. The name of the case. Yes, ma'am. But it's further yet. Estoppel would also apply if their conduct in the case, particularly in this case, they allow a judgment to be taken against an insured, Mark Lemon in this case, and do nothing. And then in the case against them, to not against Mark, but a case against the insurance company, they then say, well, we've got all these coverage defenses. The doctrine of estoppel would apply because those should have been pursued at the time that they could have pursued them. In this case, they did nothing. They just sat and waited for the jury to render a decision. And I think they hung their hat on the employment of Gary Jenkins, and they clearly lost that. In that case, I think they pay the judgment.
Okay. Thank you. I'll give State and County one more minute, too, since I did ask that question after the time was up. Mr. Bishop?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Meyer, good morning to you. I haven't seen you before, but welcome to the court.
Thank you, sir. Nice to meet you.
You know, I remember the day pretty well. It was January the 22nd of 2007. And at that point in time, I was asked to file an amicus brief in the Crocker case. I did so on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America, and the following year the Crocker case came out. As I listened to my opponent talk about estoppel or somebody listed on the policy, I got to thinking, well, I can talk with the court all about these issues, but they really don't make any difference at all. What really governs this case, the sole basis for the summary judgment in this case, is the Texas Supreme Court's ruling in National Union versus Crocker. And it is as close to being on all fours with this case, certainly from a legal standard, as any I've ever seen. What happens is you have an individual who is sued. He never requests a defense. He never turns over suit papers. The very language from my opponent's brief, I believe it's on page 13, says, as best as we can determine, Mr. Mark Lemon never had any communication whatsoever with the people at State and County. Well, may I suggest to the court that that is the beginning, the middle, and the end of this particular case, because an insured who never has any communication, who never notifies a carrier that he has been served, he expects a defense, he wants a defense, cannot, by definition, in the Crocker case, be one who is entitled to a defense. If there is no duty to defend, there is no duty to indemnify him. And as the court in Crocker went on to say specifically, absent the duty to defend, absent the duty to indemnify, there is no duty to pay this person named Jenkins who steps into the shoes of Mr. Mark Lemon, with all of his warts, with all of his failures, with all of his inactions. And if I can hearken on a point, Justice Gardner, that you made, this case is particularly important to one such as myself who routinely finds himself in the position of defending insureds. I can no more enter a gratuitous defense for Mr. Mark Lemon than I could have for the fellow up in Illinois that just got impeached. People have the right to say, I'm not going to turn in anything. I'm not going to tell my insurance company about it. Sometimes they say, I just don't really care. I've represented people from foreign countries that say, don't you dare subject me to the jurisdiction of a Texas court. Some people don't care. Some people don't want to be here. They worry about an excess judgment. They say, I'll take my chances. In this particular case, all of the whys that went into the speculation of why Mark Lemon did what he did, which is said adios, are really unimportant, because what the Texas Supreme Court said and what I urge to this court is the controlling law is basically this. An insurance contract is nothing more than a series of promises. But one of the critical promises that's made by any insured, Ruiz versus Geico tells us, any insured has to search out and see what his or her rights are under a policy. It's not the insurance company's obligation to rush out and say, please, we're going to do this for you, even though you don't want us to, even though you haven't notified us, even though we haven't been asked to. But what the fundamental duty is of any insured who wants to be defended, who wants to be indemnified, is to come forward and say, perform. What is an insurance policy? It's a contract. How do you breach a contract? Somebody says perform, and you don't perform. Now, when you look at this particular case, that critical threshold requirement, and I'm using the Supreme Court's language in Crocker, that critical threshold requirement that says, perform, defend me, indemnify me, pay this fellow off, who got a default judgment, by the way. And in Crocker, if you'll remember, the people who were defended, and this is the other Lemons and the non-LNG trucking, we won the case. We defended those people. It was under a reservation of rights, but we won the case, just like in Crocker. The nursing home won the case. Crocker's the one that had a default. And I don't ascribe improper motives to anyone, but whether it's collusion or not, it's clearly a situation where it was not reported. But help me get this point across to you, because I think you know it, and I see that spark in your mind on this fundamental point, and it is this. There is no obligation on the part of the insurance company. It's not a defense. This isn't an estoppel. This isn't a, I should have filed a declaratory judgment. Why? We don't have to file a declaratory judgment. The man never asked us to defend him. He never turned over the suit papers. He never said, I expect you to assume my defense. And that, members of the court, is a necessary condition precedent to any obligations on the part of the insurance company. And that, of course, is what the Texas Supreme Court unanimously said in the Crocker case. And it doesn't matter that the insurance company knew that he'd been served. It doesn't matter that the insurance company knew that he wasn't answering. It doesn't matter that the insurance company knew there was people out here trying to take a judgment. And it most of all doesn't matter that they took a judgment. What matters is not what they did. What matters is what Mr. Mark Lemon did. And as I said to the court just a moment ago, the answer to that is found in their brief. He never did anything. He didn't communicate with him. He was missing in action. Excuse me just a minute. Now, as the Texas Supreme Court further held in the Crocker case, people have the right to be missing in action. Confession is good for the soul, and I guess I'll make it. I have had claims that I've never turned into an insurance company. I bumped someone in a parking lot, or my son was going to get another surcharge on his policy. I just didn't turn him in. That's my right. That was Mark Lemon's right. I don't know if Mark Lemon lives in South Africa or if he lives in Jersey or where he lives, but he had the right to say, I don't care. I'm not going to turn it in. But when he makes that decision, that carries an important consequence. And the important consequence is he can't come back and stick an insurance company with a $600,000 default judgment. And insofar as the I'm reminded that of the story, and I don't mean this flippantly, but it's the young man that kills his parents and then says he's an orphan. If there was any problems in this case with their service by publication, my opponents can look in the mirror for that. Whether they properly notified Mark Lemon or not, that's their problem. That's something that our adversarial system of justice makes a unique responsibility on their part. It's not my part. It's not my insurance. I'm their enemy. I mean, they're not technically. These are nice folks from San Antonio, but we're enemies. I have a client to represent. My client and Mike Hummert's client in this case was State and County Mutual. And until their contractual obligation to act is triggered, there is no breach of contract. There is no duty to defend. There is no duty to indemnify. And there surely, members of the court, is no duty to pay Mr. Jenkins on a default obtained against Mr. Lemon. Consent is extraordinarily important. Consent and a request for action is important. And let me explain to you why. Probably each of you have had the very difficult task in the course of your professions of trying to represent someone who wasn't there. It is absolutely horrible in the insurance defense context. Why? When I enter an appearance, or Mike Hummert enters an appearance for a fellow like Mr. Mark Lemon, what do we do when we're asked to present him for a deposition? What do we do when he's asked to answer interrogatories? What do we do when the court says, I'm going to hold your client in contempt, Mr. Bishop? He hasn't done any of the things that we've asked him to do. Suddenly, I have a man who has never asked me to appear, has never authorized me to act, and we have no consent, no ethical either obligation or permission to act. And I've got a client that's going to be held in contempt of court. Or, even better, suppose that there is a limited policy of insurance, as there was in this case, and suppose that I enter an appearance for a gentleman who has never requested that the insurance company who has the power to hire me, but only when asked, suppose that I enter a judgment and instead of $100,000 or $200,000, it is an excess judgment rendered against him. Who pays the excess amount? There are severe and extreme consequences that can be wrought upon an individual who enters an appearance in a court and subjects himself to the jurisdiction of the court. And there are even more severe consequences for me attempting to gratuitously do that, and I'm purposefully plagiarizing from the language of Justice Willett's unanimous opinion, in gratuitously entering a defense for that person. The essence of what this case really comes down to, I'll comment for just a minute because my opponent commented on coverage. That's not an issue. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals has already decided there's a fact issue about whether or not there could be coverage. No, Mr. Mark Lemon was not a listed driver on the policy. He was a person whose name was put on the application, just as a truck was put on the application. Do I believe he was ever covered in this case while driving his own truck that he owned for L&G? Absolutely not, and I stated that to the beginning, and at the beginning of this case. But the Court of Appeals, in its wisdom, has already decided whether or not this issue of ownership is one that can be disposed of on summary judgment, and it decided that in the negative. Our summary judgment today has nothing to do with that. They've written, they've ruled, so let it be written, so let it be done. But in this particular case, I respectfully submit that the Texas Supreme Court's very clear edict in the National Union versus Crocker merits the same response, so let it be written, so let it be done. And what should be done, I submit to the court, is essentially this. In Crocker, there are probably three or four quotes that are completely apropos. National Union defended the insureds who turned over suit papers, but did not defend the insured who did not request or turn over suit papers for a defense, even though the claims against him were covered and National Union knew that he was a named defendant and had been served. There goes the estoppel argument right there. Second, the Texas Supreme Court in Crocker said this, put simply, there is no duty to provide a defense absent a request for coverage. Again, page 13, my opponent's brief. Mr. Lemon never communicated with State and County Mutual. Obviously, there cannot be a request for coverage where there is no request for coverage. And certainly, my opponent who is our adversary, who is a stranger to the insurance contract, to whom we have no duty and to whom we are completely adverse, cannot do for Mr. Mark Lemon what he chooses not to do for himself. Texas Supreme Court, Crocker. Mere awareness of a claimer's suit does not impose a duty on the insurer to defend under the policy. There is no unilateral duty to act unless and until the additional insured, he calls him something more than that, it doesn't matter what he's called under King versus Dallas Fire. We have to treat them all the same, additional insured, omnibus insured, named insured. Let me continue. Absent until the additional insured first requests a defense, a threshold duty, there's our condition preceding, a threshold duty, says the unanimous court, that the insured fulfills under the policy by notifying the insurer that the insured has been served with process and the insurer is expected to answer on his behalf. Crocker, one more, please. Whether National Union should be estopped to deny coverage because it was aware that Morris had been sued and served and had ample time to defend him must be answered no. National Union had no duty to notify Morris. State and county had no duty to notify Jenkins of coverage and no duty to defend Morris until Morris notified National Union that he expected National Union to answer on his behalf. That's exactly what we have here. And the court sums it up very nicely, I think. Absent a threshold duty to defend, there can be no liability to Morris, in this case, Mark Lemon, or to Crocker, in this case, Jenkins, derivatively. And I think that members of the court, the following quotation from the National Union versus Crocker case sums it up. Insurers owe no duty to provide an unsought, uninvited, unrequested, unsolicited defense. And with that, the Texas Supreme Court rendered judgment in favor of National Union. There are two cases that I would ask the court, they are in our brief, but I would ask the court to be aware of, take a look at, because they dovetail very nicely with not only Justice Gardner's decision in the Harwell case, but also with the essential principle in this case. And one of them is the members' mutual case, Members Mutual versus Branscombe at 806 Southwest 2nd, 462, and I'm referring to the quotation on page 467. But critical to our case, that decision out of the Dallas Court of Appeals in 1991 says this: there is no duty until the insured, in this case, that is Mr. Mark Lemon, not the plaintiff's attorney, until the insured is served and sends suit papers to the insurer with a request for defense. The case that is more recent, that is even later in time than is our decision in the Branscombe case, which is actually going on about 17 years now, is one that is reported only on a Westlaw citation, and that is this: Maryland Casualty Company versus American Home Assurance Company. The Westlaw cite for that out of the Houston Court of Appeals in 2008 is 2008 Westlaw 4530698. Again, the court in that particular case says it's not about what the insurer knows, it's what about the insured does. There are a couple of statements that I made on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association industry in the Crocker case that echo true to me in this particular case, and they're really not from any great legal treatise. One is from a treatise called Everything I Learned, or I Needed to Learn About Life and Know About Life, I Learned in Kindergarten, and that is, the Lord helps those who helps themselves. And in this particular case, we have a gentleman by the name of Mark Lemon who is at the center point of this case, who takes no action, who makes no request, who never appears, never answered. There was no actual trial. I think that was one of the issues that Justice Gardner made law on years ago. But one of the ways that insurance companies are held liable is not only that you request, turn over suit papers, but cooperate with them and defend yourself. Be there. The greatest piece of wisdom I ever received from a judge of how to be a good lawyer is make sure you show up. And that's one thing that Mr. Lemon never did. But be there. Because why? If you're there, you can contest. You can give your own testimony. You can prove that what they're saying is wrong. That never happened. And you cannot vicariously trip that liability onto the insurer under those circumstances. If the court has any additional questions, I'll be happy to answer. Otherwise, I'll take my seat. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Miller?
Suppose Mark Lemon was injured in the accident with Gary Jenkins. Let's suppose he was rendered unconscious and basically non-compos. He was in a hospital on life support. Let's suppose he gets sued, and the only people who know that Mark Lemon gets sued is his insurance company. Mark Lemon is not married. Mark Lemon has no kids. Mark Lemon has no beneficiaries. Mark Lemon has no estate. He's sitting in a hospital on Medicaid or Medicare on life support, and he gets served. He cannot communicate with anybody. He cannot mail anything to an insurance company. He cannot talk to anybody as a result of this accident, but who knows? The insurance company knows. Are we going to say because in the facts of that case, Mark Lemon would be excluded from coverage because the insurance company knew and he didn't do anything? We don't know that that's not the case here because we don't know what was going on between Mark Lemon and his insurance company. We know his insurance company first said, oh, you're not covered, and did that to all the defendants. And we know that they said they were going to file a Dex action, but they didn't. Why? We really don't know why. Maybe had they filed it, they may have lost. Maybe they elected to take the gamble on the jury question they lost on. We don't know that. That's why estoppel applies here. What are you going to do as a court, a trial court, as a judicial system under Texas insurance law with Mark Lemon, who's in a hospital on life support, if Crocker applies to named insureds? Insureds who are designated under policy with a carrier under the language of the liability policy says, we will pay for damages that you become legally responsible for. Mark Lemon's in a hospital, and they don't do anything? We don't know that that's not the case here. Does Crocker apply in that case? That's why I said when I first started, the facts of this case are very important. In this case, Mark Lemon was served by publication. What I do know, and I can absolutely prove, is the carrier knew it. The carrier's attorney knew it. The trial judge knew it. Everybody knew it except Mark Lemon. I can't prove that. The only people who know that are the people that should have brought a deck action and didn't. Why doesn't estoppel apply in this case?
Do you know of any case that has ever held that a failure to file a deck action creates estoppel?
No, ma'am, I do not. What I have seen is the cases that talk about the conduct of the insurance company directed to its insured with regard to reservation of rights. If they fail to, which you know, if they fail to exercise reservation of rights properly, they fail to exercise a default declaratory judgment, and they somehow or another botch it in the liability case, they're estopped. Why didn't they botch it here? We don't know about Mark Lemon. We don't know if he's alive or dead. We know what time of trial he probably was. I know certainly that within 2 years of the trial, he was alive because Gus said, I talked to him. The distinction here is not omnibus coverage in this case. The court clearly said, in Crocker, there may be reasons, and they say they probably use additional insureds, and they cite in a footnote, they probably use additional insured half a dozen times. They are very careful, saying not insureds, but additional insureds.
But counsel, the policy doesn't make a distinction with respect to the duty to furnish notice of suit, does it? Between the duty of an insured, a named insured, or an additional insured, or a omnibus insured.
Correct. It does not. The language of the policy. My position, the policy makes him an insured. He clearly fits in the definition of an insured under that policy. Not additionally insured. Not somebody that we can't really know about, but somebody who we know about on this policy. Clearly, the court's talking about additional insured, somebody that they're wanting to protect the insurance company from having to go out and investigate whether or not there may or may not be coverage for these omnibus additional insureds. And they say that these people may not want coverage, these additional insurers. may not want coverage. In this particular case, we don't know what Mark Lemon told his insurance company.
But even if it's the named insured that fails to request to furnish notice of suit, doesn't the same condition apply to them?
I don't think so. I don't think so, not under the given facts of this case. This guy served with publication, and there's no evidence before this court as to what occurred between his carrier and him. We have none of that evidence. We don't know what he was told. We don't know if the cooperation clause was breached. I understand there may be circumstances where the defense lawyer is hired to represent the defendant, but being paid by an insurance company may find himself in a box, him or herself in a box, when you got a defendant says, I'm not going to cooperate, I don't want coverage, I don't want you to go away. Those are cooperation defenses, and there are clearly remedies for the insurance company in that case, and that is you hire an independent lawyer, you file a deck action, boom, they're released. Very easy to do. If that was occurring in this case with Mark Lemon, why didn't they do as they threatened to do twice and they were going to file a deck action? To sit back and allow the judgment to be taken and then become final and say, well, we've got all these defenses, which they still haven't raised proof of. We still don't know because, like them, they're saying Mark Lemon is absent. He's gone. Not my insured. He's not. I didn't have a policy with my name on it. It's not my burden to find him. I've looked, but I can't. I thank you for your time.
May I ask
yes,
one
sir.
Additional sure. question, please?
Ma'am. Sure.
Mr. Miller, how do we know there's ever been any contact between the insurance company and Mr. Mark Lemon?
I don't. All I know is from representations from the insurance lawyer or possibly the adjuster who sent letters to me saying we've not heard from him. Had there been a deck action, I certainly would have known because then I could have taken depositions and then we'd know whether or not he was cooperating
or not.
Well,
you mentioned several times that there might have been some contact between Mr. Lemon and the insurance company, and I just wondered if that had ever been a piece of evidence about that in any of this 4 to 5 years, 6 years, or 10 years that you've been working on this.
11 years. Honestly, Judge, I don't recall any, and I'm not going to represent to you that I know of any.
All right. Thank you, sir.
I have to presume that there wasn't any, which, you know, if that's the case, why didn't they file the deck action?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Thank you, Mr. Bishop. We will ask the clerk to adjourn us.